Yesterday, you and I spoke with Senator Marco Rubio right after the program. I want to play back a little bit of that for you now, including talking to Marco Rubio about his reelection campaign and how he feels about Senator Kirk here.
I think Mark's going to do great. I really do. I mean, people have to work with Mark to understand this is a guy that brings kind of an intelligent, thoughtful leadership to the He's always putting Illinois first, not his party, which I think all people should do, obviously. You know, he's been a big leader. You know, we've been involved in the VA cleanup stuff, and he's been a huge leader in that. And on fiscal conservatism, he's always on the right side of the issues when it comes to taxes, wasteful spending, and on national security. I mean, he's just been tremendous on all these issues with Iran and beyond. So it's just someone we need back in the U.S. Senate.
For somebody that's kind of a political junkie like me, I was fascinated by the story of you getting back into the race. But if people aren't aware, as I understand it, a personal friend of yours in the race stepped aside at one point, not because there was some deal between the two of you, but because, speaking of taking one for the team, I felt that he thought you had a better chance of holding the seat. Is that accurate?
I think that's exactly how he felt, and it wasn't because he was doing anything wrong. It was just in a year like this where so much attention is being paid to the presidential race, it's hard to cut through, and there was a real concern about it. So it won't be an easy race. I mean, Florida, as you know, is a one-point state one way or the other, and
right.
It's a tough fight, but he felt like he gave us the best chance, and I looked at it and said, look, I don't want to be the reason why Chuck Schumer becomes majority leader and we lose the Senate and all the consequences that come with that, and it was a difficult in the sense that we had another idea of what we wanted to do at this point in our life, but I'm sure it was the right decision. I really am.
The slog that the Senate can be, you know, if you're a student of American history at all, set up as the deliberative branch doesn't mean nothing gets done. But is this also correct that was the core of your frustration, is how little was able to be accomplished because of Harry Reid's control?
When Harry Reid was the majority leader, I remember those first 4 out of the 6 years I've been there and Mark's been there, nothing happened. I mean, it wasn't just that it was slow. It was just non-existent. He literally just paralyzed the place. We took more votes the first 3 months of 2015 than we did basically 3 out of the 4 years that Harry Reid was there. And that's how bad it had gotten. And so, like the enormous majority of Americans, I'm very frustrated with the Senate. I'm very frustrated with the Congress and Washington. But giving up is not the answer. Certainly, given the stakes at play here, especially with the Supreme Court vacancies, I mean, and one already exists.
I know that you've not been shy about speaking out when you've disagreed with candidate Trump, and I'd like to find things I agree on with candidate Trump maybe once in a while. But he continues to kind of get in his own way. How concerned are you about his ability to do the job, regardless of how you feel about Hillary?
Well, my sense of it is, and obviously, look, I had an 11-month race, and everybody knows the policy and attitudinal differences I may have on issues and with Donald, but at this point, it's gotten to a choice, and it really, if there's only 2 people in the world that are going to be president, either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, and for me, that's the choice. And I view the Senate as a place that can always act as a check and balance on whoever the next president is. I also think that there's something to be said for once you're actually in that position, once you're actually working at this thing and you're in there and you start to have access to information that perhaps you didn't have before, especially for someone who's never been in politics, I think it starts to impact your views a little bit. And that's my sense of it is as you know, he settles into this role as the nominee and ultimately as the president, that access to these issues is going to begin to, in some ways, kind of shape some of the policy positions given reality versus perhaps what you might read about, you know, on a blog somewhere. So I think that's going to be a real factor.
How much of that, though, is hope, as in hope that he'll do the right thing versus feeling that you know him well enough to think that he will?
Well, obviously, for someone who's never been in politics, you don't have a record to kind of point to or to talk about any sorts of things. So, yeah, I mean, it's an open question in some ways. But in the other way, I would say to you that we know exactly what we're going to get with Hillary Clinton. We've seen it throughout her time in public service. It's more of the same types of policies. We know exactly what we're going to get from her. And so, to me, that's even more concerning.
Well, but you know, it's interesting, Senator, and Andre, I want to get Andre in here, but I think for the first time in my lifetime, and I'm 55, I think you're mid 40, so I've got 10 on you. But in my lifetime, I've certainly seen cases where you go, really, 300 million people, this is the best we've got. This year, it's much darker than that, where people are going, okay, who's going to do the least damage over the next 4 years? It's not supposed to work this way. This is the choice we have. But I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the damage that both of them could do.
Well, I understand your point of view on that. And obviously, you know, a lot of people have shared it over time and regarding this campaign. The other thing I take comfort in, though, is that in this republic, it's the voters who have made this decision. We've gone out there. We've made our arguments during the primary. The voters looked at all of it. They looked at all of it over months and months and months and decided this is what they wanted. And in the end, in the republic, that's the way it goes. And so at some point, you got to be willing to say, well, look, you know, I feel a certain way about certain things, but the voters feel differently, and I have to respect that and see how that plays out. So that's where I take comfort, is that we are in the country that had an election. We had a primary. We'll have a general. We'll have one again in 2 years and another one for president in 4. And in the end, when you buy into this republic, one of the things you buy into is the belief that just because you have more degrees on the wall and have been following this for a longer period of time doesn't mean that millions of Americans who feel differently and vote so may not be the ones that are right about something. So, again, it's a very unusual year. I understand that.
Senator, will you endorse Donald Trump because you think he'll do great things for the country and be a great president, or simply because he is the party's nominee?
Well, you know, I would say two things. Number one, I would say three things. One, I signed a pledge, and I said, when I signed that pledge, I did so because I believe that no matter how much I disagreed with everybody on that debate stage, any one of them would be better than Hillary Clinton. So that's number one. Number two, I honestly believe that we have a chance for him to do things that we know for sure we have no chance that Hillary Clinton will do the right thing on a number of things. And number three is, I do believe that he will be in favor of fixing the tax code. Maybe not exactly the way I would want to fix it, but I believe he'd be in favor of that. I think we would have much more cooperation from him on balancing the debt than we ever will get from her. I believe he's serious about rebuilding our military. I don't believe that she is. He buys into and supports the sequester. I think he takes the risk of radical Islam seriously in a way that even last night we had a 6-hour convention, whatever it was. I don't think that the word ISIS ever came up once in that entire night. I don't know if it's possible given anything that's going on in the world. And I think we have a much better chance of, and I think he's committed to doing this, by the way, of putting someone on the Supreme Court that will actually apply it as originally intended versus the kind of nominee that I know we're going to get under Hillary Clinton. So, you know, those are the things I look at as a person who has the opportunity to be way better than anything Hillary Clinton's ever going to be.
I understand that, and we may differ in a few things, but we're not that far apart on many. I just think that when Congress decides, and I've had this argument with Leader McConnell, when Congress decides that we'll determine the timetable on when we actually vet a nominee for the Supreme Court, it's a dangerous leap to make. And I have no faith in the Democrats that they won't try to exact some revenge on that move down the road. Having said
it's
that,
possible.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's possible. They've done it before, not just on Supreme Court nominees, but on others. It's quite possible. And again, I would tell you that the number, I'm not advocating that we lower the number of Supreme Court justices, but there's no magic to the number 9. I mean, that's wholly set by Congress. We could lower the Supreme Court to 5 or 7 or make it 15. I mean, that's the key is to have a Supreme Court that can function, and more importantly, a Supreme Court in which at least 5 of the justices understand that their job is not to write law. Their job is to interpret the Constitution as originally intended, whether they agree with the policy outcome or not.
Before I want to talk about Florida for just a second, because I know we're going to run out of time. But before we do that, how concerned are you about what's going on in Turkey?
I'm deeply concerned. You know, Erdogan was already moving in an authoritarian direction. And this is not and an Islamist direction, by the way. He's not a jihadist, but he's clearly an Islamist. This is a nation founded, you know, under Ataturk, a very strong secular lean, and now he's moved it in a different direction. And this coup, which was not a very orchestrated one to begin with, has given him the excuse now to just go into overdrive and move even faster on some of these moves he was already making in sort of authoritarianism. And why I'm concerned about that is because authoritarianism often in a country, especially like Turkey, leads to all sort of internal discontent, which becomes prime recruiting environment for radical jihadists and others to step in. I mean, that's what we've seen happen with Saudi Arabia and with Egypt. You have a lot of discontent among young males in particular, and suddenly they become prime recruiting targets for radical Islam. And so I'm very concerned about it.
Senator, will you run again in 4 years for president?
You might as well announce it now, Senator.
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well get it out of the way. Come on.
You know, it's an interesting question. I've kind of, I guess, learned here not to say absolutes about anything because I don't know what the world's going to look like in 2 years, much less four. I can tell you what I'm thinking now as I get into this race, and it's not about running for president. Because if I was, I wouldn't have run for re-election, to be quite frank, from a pure political perspective. Getting back into a tough race, this is not a guarantee for me or a layup or anything. It's a tough race, competitive state, top swing state in the country, and with a real chance to win, but also a chance to lose. So it's not, it's not the easiest route forward. The easiest thing for me to have done politically is just to step aside, stay active, and reload and run again in 4 to 8 years. But I chose to run for re-election because I'm committed to going back to the Senate, working hard, trying to change the institution and the direction of our country. And that's what I'm focused on 100%. And as I've said, if being the best U.S. Senator Florida's ever had is my, capstone of political career, I would be more than satisfied with that. I'd be honored by it.
You know, we've spoken a lot, or I have specifically, about just banging on Congress, about not getting things done. It's really both sides, more so in the House. But we don't give enough credit to the fact that these are real people who have real families, and you've been very honest about how much your family means to you and how much you value not just your wife's opinion, but your kids' vote in all of this as well. So what do your kids think about staying in the race for Senate? Because I'm guessing they probably thought they'd have you around a little more.
Yeah, when I say we made this decision, we really did. I mean, for my family, my kids are a little older now, so they don't have a vote yet in our household, but they have an opinion that we listen to.
Sure.
And we always viewed this decision to stay in public service and to be in public service as a decision we made as a family, and that includes my wife. Obviously, they don't run for office, but they all contribute to this, whether it's accepting the time away from home or going to the events or being there with me when I need the support. And that's the decision we made again. And it's a cost-benefit thing. Certainly, there was things and opportunities to do some unique and exciting things in the private sector, and that will be there again in the future, I hope. But we made the decision that at this moment in our history, with all the uncertainty surrounding not just the world but this election, we had a chance to make a difference. And that's why we got into this to begin with. So it was a collective decision, and they've been very, very supportive and excited about it.
Which one of your kids is able to exact the most guilt on you?
None of them. They're not about guilt for them. They're kind of, some incredible way, God has blessed us and has really kind of shielded our family from a lot of this. For them, life is generally normal, except the fact that Dad is not around every night, but beyond that, and that's a big deal, by the way, but, sure. Beyond that, they've also been able to meet people and go to places and see things and have an interest in issues. They're closer to these issues than
that's true.
I was at their age. And so there's a benefit to it, too. I mean, they've been exposed to some things that I hope will expand their horizons and ultimately encourage them to be engaged, maybe not as office holders, but care about public policy, about the world, about things that are going on, and a unique experience to be close to some of that.
Well, as a commuting dad for a lot of years, I understand being away from home and how tough it is to leave. So I salute the effort. I wish you luck in the reelection efforts in Florida. What's the campaign website?
MarcoRubio.com. And again, I want everybody in Illinois to go out and vote for Mark Kirk and help him. But if you got any extra money or any extra time, we'd need your help. And so go to MarcoRubio.com. We really need your help.
Well, and I think you supply an important voice in the conversation going forward. And possibly if you have maybe that men in black gun with a little light on it that can hold up to Trump's eyes when he gets out of line. Anything at all you could do to help keep us between the white lines and moving forward and getting better, you got my back. Or I've got yours.
Thank you. I appreciate I appreciate that encouragement. I really do.
All right. Enjoy your trip.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.